Welcome, dear Dhamma friends. So we are going to discuss a particular sutta. We are basically trying to get some insights from Buddha's teaching. And these days we are discussing Pena Pindupama Sutta, which is available in Khanda Samyutta. And I have taken a translation made by Thanissaro Bhikkhu. And literally the Pena Pindupama means a lump of form. Basically, as we observe a river bank, because of the waves, there is a form being generated. So this is the simile that Buddha gives for the form, F-O-R-M, to our body basically. It appear solid, it appear like a heavy thing, but as we closely analyze, one may understand there is nothing substantial there, and nothing worth there, nothing attractive there. It's like an empty, hollow form. So this is the simile that Buddha gives in this Pena Pindupama Sutta for the body and all the types of forms. Rupakkhanda. There are five aggregates: form aggregate, feeling aggregate, perception aggregate, then formations aggregate and the consciousness aggregate. To all these five aggregates, Buddha giving very beautiful and very profound similes. And the rupa, the form, the simile given is a lump of form, a form generated because of the waves in a river. And this lump of form is generated maybe at the river bank. And once we closely analyze it, there is nothing substantial, there is nothing worth, nothing solid. It's an empty, hollow form. And then Buddha talks about the feelings. And feelings, as you know, there are three types mainly: the pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, and the neutral feelings. And any type of these feelings, even though they appear like existing for a while, as we closely look at them, we may understand they are extremely short-lived and they are really transient. So whatever the pleasurable feeling, even though they arise, they quickly pass away. Similarly, maybe painful feelings, and within the painful feeling, within the pleasurable feeling, within the neutral feeling, if we closely analyze, we can recognize there are so many minute feelings. The resultant effect is what we actually feel, but internally, if we closely analyze, there we will understand it's not a single feeling, but rather an accumulation of so many minute feelings. Each minute feeling quickly arise and pass away. Each minute feeling quickly arise and pass away. So like that, it's a succession of arising and passing away of minute feelings. So it is like a rain dropped on a water surface. As a result, water bubbles are generated, and those water bubbles immediately burst. So there are so many water bubbles are generated, but quickly they burst. The same simile, that simile Buddha gives for feelings. Though various feelings we encounter, pleasurable, painful, neutral, internally what is happening there is like this kind of bubbles, feelings, minute feelings arising and passing away, arising and quickly fades away. And then Buddha talks about the perception, various signs. Now, as we look at something, we are recognizing those sights using the pre-stored information, various signs, marks, and we consider them as permanent, and we consider them as useful and really worthy. So that is the typical perception, typical understanding. But if we closely look at them, there we can understand. So they are like a mirage. Though they appear like available, ultimately, it is not really available. Say, for example, what you see through your eyes. We know, even through science, so there is a inverted reflection or inverted image happens in our retina. So that image being corrected through the brain, and then we give a kind of a interpretation telling that this is so and so. We attribute a name, we attribute attribute various qualities, and on top of that we start to think. We start to think again and again, and then ultimately we create even a story, and we add so many preconceived ideas, and as a result we are in a huge fantasy. And this appears like something substantial, but as we analyze it, as we go to the bottom, as we go to the root, to the source, there we'll understand how a little mark, a sign, as a root cause generated all this obsession or all this fantasy. So the fantasy appear like something important, something substantial, something very difficult to overcome, but as we go closer to the root, there it is very insubstantial. There is nothing there, nothing worthy there. So what is actually available is like a mirage. So there is no water there. But we unknowingly and we ignorantly get fooled or deluded by this appearance. So this is the interesting simile that Buddha gives for perception, signs. And then we discussed last week about the formations, sankhara, where as we see something, we don't stop at that level. We add various our preconceived ideas onto it, various likes and dislikes, and we do a lot of additions, subtractions, multiplications, and our maybe cultural values, upbringings, our education. So many factors we mix, we add, we attach to what we have seen. So similarly, when we hear something, we do the same thing. When we taste something, when we smell something, when we feel through our body, and even when a slight thought comes to the mind, we do all these fabrications, we do all these constructions. We are the ones actually weaving the net. So through our senses, we get very, say, raw data, and mostly, say we can say some pure data, but on top of that we add so many other things which comes through our past experiences, our tendencies, habits, etc. And now it becomes a huge thing. Now it becomes something substantial. But as we move, if we are able to peel out, if we are able to take layer by layer, if we are able to do some reverse engineering, then one may understand there is nothing there. So it's a kind of an addition of so many different directions or so many different layers, but internally there is nothing. It's like an onion. So as we peel out, there is nothing there. So similarly, Buddha gives the simile here. It's like a banana trunk. So you know, in a banana trunk, there is no heartwood. So if we cut it from the middle, if we analyze it, we can recognize there is no heartwood. So this is the simile Buddha gives for the formations, fabrications, sankhara khanda. Even though it appears like substantial, even though it appears like there is a strong trunk, but actually, there is no such substantial heartwood. Rather, it's a series of layers. So all the constructions we do, all the fabrications we do are very similar to that. So as if one is able to look at like that, if one is able to go behind and see what we did on top of the sense data. So we are the ones fabricated. Sense data are, in a way, raw data. On top of that, we add a lot of things and we fabricated it, we added to it, we subtracted to it, we multiplied it, and then it becomes colorful, then it becomes wonderful. So that is what has happened. So therefore, Buddha asks us to recognize this fabricated nature, this illusory nature. Buddha asks us to recognize. So as we recognize, then we understand that we are the ones weaving the net. We are the ones fabricating. We are the ones adding. Originally, there is nothing. Originally, it is very raw data that we, through our senses, that we take in. But on top of that, we do a lot of fabrications, a lot of formations, a lot of constructions. So if we are able to stop that fabrication, if we are able to stop that formations, then actually we can have a fairly peaceful mind, because this fabrication, this construction creates a lot of tension, creates a lot of stress, and creates a lot of mess in our mind. If we are able to reduce this fabrication, if we are able to even completely stop these fabrications, so then Buddha says the mind becomes really peaceful, very tranquil, quite still. These fabrications are making the mind a real mess. And then actually we can move forward to today's discussion, that is the consciousness aggregate. So consciousness, related to the consciousness aggregate, Buddha mentioned it is like a magic trick. So what is happening inside the consciousness is very much like a magic. So you know there are magicians who know various tricks, and they can delude us. They organize a magic show and we spend a lot of money and we go there to see magic. And they know how to cheat us. And they have various tactics. They have hats, they have sticks, they have hidden pockets, and they have sticks with hidden holes, etc. And the hats with various hidden pockets. And all the tricks are there. So using those various tricks, they know how to cheat us. They know how to delude us. So we, like fools, get deluded, and we actually clapping, we are whistling, and we are enjoying just by getting deluded. So Buddha mentioned the consciousness do the same thing. So on top of consciousness, there is a name and form, kind of an image, mental image happens on the consciousness, and it appears like true image. It appears like true image. It is not a real image, but it appears like a true image. To give another simile, Most Venerable Katukurunde Jnanananda Bhante gives a very beautiful simile here. He gives it is like a film. You know, in a cinema, so there is a kind of a screen, maybe white color screen available, and onto which that we do some projection, maybe using a projector, maybe using a, say, old instrument, that we do some projection. And actually during the night time, or if we are artificially making the whole building kind of dark, then even we can't see the screen. But when we project a light beam onto the screen, then we can see. What we actually see is kind of an image. It may be a beautiful woman, it may be a handsome boy, it may be a waterfall, it may be a mountain, it may be a volcano, whatever it is. Now, if we are in the audience, and when we observe it, when we watch it, without our knowledge, we consider it as real. So there is volcano, there is sound, there is real lava now flowing. And we even get afraid. We may try our way to go out, because this lava is now coming towards us. So it appear like really real. Now suppose there is an accident going on, there are many vehicles moving here and there, and we feel like all are coming towards us. And we may be changing our posture, we are jumping from our seat to get rid of the accident. But it is a picture, but it is an image, it's a film. So we forget that. So similarly, our consciousness has the capacity to reflect. So whenever name and form, Namarupa, is projected onto it, so the consciousness get entangled in the Namarupa, name and form. So once consciousness get entangled, get connected, well established on this name and form, then name and form appear like real. Name and form appear like something substantial, something important, something that I have to be responsible, something that I have to act upon. But if we can connect with the simile, so it is a film, it is an image, it is not a real volcano, it is not a real waterfall. If it is a real waterfall, the whole screen get wet, but it is not a real waterfall. If it is a real volcano, the whole screen get burnt, but it is not a real volcano. So we can understand it's an image, it's a film, it's a fabrication, it's a fiction. Now the same thing happens in our mind. So the consciousness have the capacity to reflect on it, whatever the name and form projected onto it, and consciousness then appear like something real, this whole episode appear like something real, and we get deluded. So therefore Buddha asks here not to get deluded. Consider this as a magic. The magic, though it appear like real, there is something deluded there, something illusionary there. So let's have wisdom to penetrate. So that's the Buddha's request in a way. So he asks us to inquire what we experience. So whenever our mind show or reflect various images in the mind, so rather than simply believing them, so Buddha asks us to reflect, Buddha asks us to recognize, Buddha asks us to wisely penetrate the situation. So if one is able to do that, the illusionary nature of the consciousness can be recognized. And again, Buddha mentioned, it is necessary to develop wisdom in order to understand the consciousness. Because the functionality of the consciousness is very subtle and really difficult to understand. So one needs to develop a fair amount of wisdom if one needs to understand the function of the consciousness. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, Panya bhavetabba vinyanam parinyaya. One needs to cultivate panya, the wisdom, in order to understand about the consciousness, the function of the consciousness. If one understands the function of the consciousness, then it is difficult for us to get deluded. In other terms, like suppose you want to understand the tricks of the magician. So rather than you sit on the audience, suppose now you go behind the screen and now you are hiding on a corner and now see you are trying to understand all the tricks of the magician. Probably if you are so carefully looking at the tricks of the magician, probably you may be able to understand all these tricks. You may be able to understand all the hidden pockets, all the hidden, say, holes and various other illusions that he is having. You probably can understand if we closely look at him. Not while being in the audience, maybe you are hiding closer to the screen on the stage and you are hiding and watching very carefully all the tricks that magician is using. So if we are looking like that, suppose you are now slowly unentangling all these tricks. You are able to recognize all these tricks. Now you can't enjoy the magic show. So that is a very interesting phenomena. So if you have to enjoy the magic show, you have to get deluded. On the other hand, if you have wisdom, if you are able to recognize all the magic tricks, magician's tricks, it's all illusions, then actually you can't enjoy the magic show. Rather, you understand how cunning this person is, how cheating this person is and how waste of money in looking at this kind of a magic show, because he is simply cheating us. So you feel like sort of disenchanted. You have no any kind of enjoyment. Rather, you understand how foolish we were, how foolish I was. I was watching this kind of illusion. I was watching this kind of cheating, and then I was enjoying. But now I have wisdom. Now I know what are the tricks. Now there is no way further to get tricked, or no way further to get cheated. Then actually you can't enjoy the magic show. Rather, you have really seen the true nature. You have really seen the things as they truly are. So this is how the wisdom is developed. So as you are able to develop wisdom, then this function of the consciousness can be recognized. As we recognize this function of the consciousness, then the name and form get fade away. So more and more the mind become clear. So various images come and go, but it can't cover the mind. It can't represent any kind of ongoing story in the mind. So your fabrications become less and less. Storytelling, inner chatter become less and less. Clarity of the mind increase. Spaciousness of the mind increase. And understanding of the mind increase. And the wandering of the mind reduce. And you are able to maintain a still mind, a calm mind, tranquil mind, because you have penetrated the consciousness. And the consciousness now don't have name and form to get entangled, to get deluded. As a result, the consciousness can't have any kind of an established nature, can't have any delusion. So as a result, the mind become quite, say, bright in a way, or luminous in a way, or wise, still, calm, tranquil, spacious. So all these terms we can use. So therefore Buddha asks to understand this illusionary nature of the consciousness. And end of the sutta, there are a few verses. So that is where the meaning, this kind of a summary is given. Form is like a glob of form, feeling a bubble, perception a mirage, and fabrications a banana trunk, consciousness a magic trick. This has been taught by the kingsman of the sun, that is the Buddha. And if one is able to understand this nature, the reality, then if one is closely examining it, he may understand this whole scenario is like empty. It is like hollow. Nothing substantial. And so if one have this kind of an understanding, he become disenchanted about the body. Disenchanted about various feelings, various perceptions, fabrications, and the consciousness. And he may understand that once this body passes away, it may be thrown at the charnel ground and it becomes a victim or food for other various, say, insects and various other animals. So more and more one may develop disenchantment, nibbida, and may understand that one may get more perseverance to continue one's practice, more encouragement to pursue one's practice, because one understand, okay, this is the real nature. I have to understand this reality, this truth. Otherwise, I have to constantly go on and on in this samsara. Otherwise, I am constantly getting deluded by all these various tactics of the consciousness. So one is now start to develop wisdom, in a way to understand the Four Noble Truths. So as a result, one now continue one's practice diligently, so that one may understand these five aggregates. So if one is able to understand these five aggregates properly, so that is the understanding of the impermanence, the unsatisfactory nature, and again the non-self nature. So if one have that understanding, one may let go without grasping to any of these aggregates. So without grasping to form aggregate, you start to let it go. Without grasping to various feelings, you start to let them go. Without grasping various perceptions, signs, marks, you let them go. Without grasping to any kind of fabrications, you basically stop fabrications. And without getting deluded by the consciousness, one may try to maintain a clear mind, a spacious mind, a mind free from name and form, a mind which is not deluded or entangled by the name and form. So this is how Buddha very beautifully mentioned in this Painapindapurma Sutta about five aggregates. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
Tatu is not there today, so I have to present the questions.
Right.
So we have 7 questions. First 4 are actually general questions. Some are requests, but I'll go through them anyway. So the first one is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I found it great to observe the seal Bhante gave us after our retreat last day. It had practices such as not to use harsh words, not to say gossip, and etc. On behalf of all the participants, I would like to request, it would be so great if Bhante can give that special type of seal on perhaps the first day program of every month. Apologies for not knowing the exact term to that special seal type. Greatly appreciate Bhante's valuable service and all the advices. Much merits and with metta.
Yeah, I think during the retreat time, I feel I gave 8 precepts. Since you are practicing what you call the celibacy. So anyway, I can give what you call this Ajivattamaka Sila. That includes avoiding gossip and tale-bearing, say, divisive talk, etc. And probably next week is actually the first week of the month of May. So if you all like, we can start the session by giving precepts. So may not be the typical Uposatha Attanga Sila, but rather the typical Ajivattamaka Sila I can give. So you can use that as a kind of a determination so that to adhere to those precepts. Yeah, that's a good request and we'll consider that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the next one, that's another request. Swaminuhansa has a request. We would like to hear the Dhamma Sutta that Lord Buddha preached and advised for Passaga Mahanun on the day 2 of meeting them. Much merits and with metta.
Yeah, so it had actually happened in a different manner. So first Buddha preached Dhamma Chakkappavattana Sutta, and then what happened is he continued to preach Dhamma only actually during the first day from the during the it is I mean this is what it is actually recorded. So only Venerable Kondanja attained Sotapanna, not the others. So then Buddha actually continued to preach others. And actually it is mentioned that other 4 monks went on Pindapatha and they collect food while Buddha and another monk is staying at Migadaya. And Buddha actually continued to teach. So at that time, Venerable Baddhya attained Sotapanna. And similarly, the next day, another 4 monks go on Pindapatha while Buddha and another monk staying, and Buddha continue to teach and say, Baddhya, Vappa, Mahanama, Asaji. So likewise, all the 5 now attain Sotapanna. Now, after they all become stream winners, now Buddha preach Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, and that is the teaching on the non-self. And by hearing that, it is mentioned that all five attain arahathood. So probably you may be referring this sutta, which actually caused all of them to understand the full liberation or to for them to become fully enlightened arahants. So that sutta is called Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Yeah.
My next question. It's also a general question. Venerable Bhante, I have started to regularly get thoughts of aversion come to my mind. I am mindful of them and decide to watch the train go past and not to get on board this train of thought as soon as I can. But why this change in mind? How can I be happier and not be disturbed by such destructive thoughts? Occasionally, I get angry and lash out also. Thanks.
Yeah, actually, this problem I also have. So I share my own experience then. So what I understood is that some days are like that. I mean, certain times things are happening not in favor of us. So actually on those times, it is quite easy to get into wrong or kind of a bad mood. And there are other days, suppose you didn't get enough sleep, or you didn't get enough food, or you didn't get enough rest, you didn't get any kind of a praise from someone, you didn't get enough recognition. So all these are certain external conditions causing us to become somewhat irritated. So we are not properly recognized, we are not properly respected, our words are not considered. So we all have some sort of an ego. So if our selves are being praised, if ourselves are fairly recognized, we are given the sort of the, say, the keynote address, then we may be quite happy. But on the other hand, if we are not respectfully addressed, if we are not given the, say, kind of the due respect, or if we are not well recognized, so likewise, there are so many other reasons making us unhappy, and that actually irritates us, and then we get on to some angry moods. So there we need to understand the root cause in a way. So we still believe there is someone here. There is I here. There is a person here. There is an individual here. So this individual has to be well respected. This individual has to be well recognized. This individual has to be properly taken care of. So this kind of an attitude, wrong attitude we all have. So if we really want to say overcome anger, so we have to even address these very root causes. That is the, in a way, the ignorance. So the ignorance of the self view. So we consider this kind of a self, there's a kind of a person, there is somebody inside this body or inside these perceptions, say fabrications, say the formations, consciousness, etc. So that is where the five aggregates are quite useful. Even today's Dhamma sermon. So if we use all these five aggregates to analyze the, say, the experience. So when we are going through certain experience, if we are able to divide this experience into five groups, five categories, what is the form aggregate? Say, for example, you are now getting angry. Say, for example, someone is blaming you. Now you hear various sounds. You hear various words. Now, if we apply five aggregates onto this, so the sounds and the ears, the body, all these things comes under the form aggregate. And we may be having some irritation, some sort of a, say, kind of bad feelings, painful feelings in our mind. So that comes under the feeling aggregate. And there are various perceptions. So we are recognizing each and every word, and we are giving the various interpretations. These are bad words, these are good words. So likewise, we have all our stored information. And as a result, we have perceptions. And this also we can understand. So this becomes the sanya, or the perception aggregate. And once we hear the sound, and we are the ones adding or subtracting. We are the ones fabricating, constructing. So the sounds are merely sounds, but we attribute a lot of information to this. We attribute a lot of norms, values to this. And we attribute a lot of customs to this. So as a result, actually, we get further entangled in a way. So this all additions, this all fabrications, this all constructions, which we do through our mind, it happens very quickly. And all these comes under the fabrications aggregate or the formations aggregate, sankhara khanda. So as I mentioned, say all the eye consciousness, all the ear consciousness, and a lot of thinking comes under the mind consciousness. And all these comes under the consciousness aggregate. So if we are able to analyze like this, so there is no person, there is no another person who is blaming us, but these are kind of ongoing experience. Only a sort of experience is there, but there is no person. There is no person to get hurt. There is no person who is blaming. Rather, it's a kind of sounds and sights going on. And likewise, if we able to properly understand the situation, properly analyze the experience, so then we are in a position to disentangle the whole situation. So then there is no place for the anger to stay. So if there is no person, to whom am I going to get angry? If there is no person here, to whom are they blaming? So these are certain questions that we can ask. So this is actually in a way a little profound way that we can enter to the question. But there are various other ways. Say, for example, when we are hearing someone's blames, probably we can understand, okay, he is not in a good mood. Why should I get into a bad mood? So why can't I maintain sort of a calm attitude considering all the repercussions happens going to happen if I also get into the bad mood? If I also get onto the bad mood, and if I start to react, if I also start to blame, then it can become a struggle. It can become a quarrel. So then we may start to quarrel each other, hit each other. So then it becomes a huge problem. So understanding that danger, so we can stop our side. So they may be blaming because they couldn't have that capacity, didn't have that capacity. But we as, say, Buddha's followers, we as the meditators, if we can apply breaks, if we can establish mindfulness, if we can control ourselves, then there's a better chance for us not to get angry. So likewise, actually, we have to practically face this situation. So whenever anger arises in the mind, we should recognize that. Okay, there is anger now arisen in the mind. It may be due to sound. It may be due to blame. But like that, as much as possible, we are now aware of the anger which is arisen in the mind. And as we are able to aware of anger, then what happens is anger loses its grip. So anger can't overwhelm us. Anger can't drive us. Rather, anger loses its strength. Why? Because we establish mindfulness. Anger is not I. Anger is not me. Anger is merely anger. So we properly recognize. We were able to put it into the correct perspective. So as a result, so now we can overcome anger. So likewise, there are many methods that we can use. So I have just explained a couple of methods. Yeah.
Next question. This question 4 of 7. Dear Bhante, I have been listening to some sermons of Ajahn Sumedho in Amaravati temple and the online retreats recently. The practice and the Dhamma explanation seems very similar to what we hear from you. After listening to a few retreat recordings done in the past, the only difference I could find was that the Thai forest tradition practice of Ajahn Chah is a bit more oriented towards Dhammanupassana, bringing in the Four Noble Truths at the early stages of the practice. And our Burmese method gives more prominence to the technique. Appreciate Bhante's comments as we may get exposed to Thai and Burmese forest traditions time to time with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, even though currently we name it as either Thai, Burmese, Sri Lankan, actually it is the Buddha's teaching. So if we go to the root, so it is the Buddha's teaching. So even if you hear from a Thai monk, you can see whether it is Buddha's teaching. You can check. Even if you listen from a Sri Lankan monk, even if you listen from a Burmese monk, you can check whether it is Buddha's teaching. So ultimately, everything comes from the Buddha. So Buddha's teaching is something that we need to appreciate. So I really respect Ajahn Sumedho, and I have really learned from him. And I can remember while I was studying for my A-levels, that was in 1991. Actually, this is around 1990 or something. The first book I received from Amaravati. Actually, I wrote to them, and they sent us a couple of books, and Four Noble Truths is one of the really interesting book I have received. And there's a huge impact that book has made on top of my life. So therefore, I really appreciate Ajahn Sumedho's teaching, and they are really practical. So they, therefore, I can actually recommend his teachings, and we can follow them and we can use them, because he talks about the Buddha's teaching. He talks very practical aspects of the Buddha's teaching. And of course, the Mahasi tradition and the Burmese tradition gives a lot of insights on Kayanupassana and how to get on to the practice. So that is in a way helps us to get on to the practice. That's help us to develop mindfulness. And once we develop mindfulness and once we get on to Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, so the understanding about Four Noble Truths, practical application of that is extremely useful. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 9. This is a mindful sitting. Venerable Bhante, I start by becoming present to sensations in the body and start mindfulness on breathing. While even 10 minutes of sitting dampens my emotions, any emotions present, and makes me peaceful, I then start getting a mild headache on the right side of the head in it internally, which might be due to overexertion of effort on the delicate task of watching the breath, which may be the continuation of the theme of my day. What advice would you have me to proceed? Much merits. The end of the question.
Yeah, yeah, true. Actually, this balancing of effort is one key parameter of our practice. So it will take a little time, but you will understand that. So today you got a headache, but tomorrow you are trying your best not to have a headache. So how not to have a headache? So where am I gone wrong? Where did I apply too much energy, too much effort? So you need to investigate now. So as we continue our practice, breath calms down, mind becomes fairly tamed. So at that time, actually, we have to reduce the strength. We have to reduce the effort. Otherwise, if we are continuing the same amount of effort, it may lead to a lot of complications, a lot of, say, headaches, and it may not arouse enough concentration. Samadhi may not appear. So it is our sort of understanding, mindfulness, helping us to balance. So as we are continuing the practice, we have to be sort of observe the ongoing process. Time to time, we have to do some sort of introspection and see whether the mind has now collected, whether the mind has now calmed down, whether the distractions have now reduced. If so, I need to calm down further. I need to reduce effort. I don't need to crunch teeth. I don't need to put enough too much effort. Rather, let the things happen now. Let it go. So you do some sort of from active participation to passive observation. Previously, you may did some active participation. Say, if the mind get distracted, so you have to purposely bring it back. But now it is not necessary because mind stays with the object. So you don't need to do anything right now. So you can simply do some passive observation. So likewise, as the meditation evolves, we need to do that adjustment so that you need to learn through trial and error. So don't worry. So these are the faults or these are the mistakes that we do from which actually we can learn. And next time we can do this fine adjustments and then you will succeed. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 9, mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, this report is regarding my sitting mindfulness practice. I scan the body when I start and make sure that I am aware of the body sensations to confirm that I am in the present moment. Afterwards, I try to observe the sensations in the upper body and most of the time I can find the breath. Sometimes I feel the rising and falling, but I wait until I start feeling the breath. Then I observe the breath and within one or two breaths, I get to know the differences between the in-breath and out-breath and many sensations around the nostrils where I keep my focus on. After about 5 minutes of continuous application of this technique, the breath starts to fade away. My mind distracts often during this time, but I am able to bring it back by becoming aware of the sensations again, and the observation process starts again at the subtle state. During this time, the breath becomes more subtle and very pleasant. It is like a gel moving up and down, and my body becomes lighter and feels like floating. At some point, my breath fades away and I reach a relaxed state. The awareness stays in the empty space in front of me. I can stay like this for 5 to 10 minutes, feeling and observing the empty space. Afterwards, the focus slowly comes to my sitting posture. I observe the space that I was in when the breath faded away, shrinking as the focus comes back to my body. My observations come inside the body and concentrate around the sensations of my sitting posture, mainly the pressure on my back from the floor. During this time, the body pains and aches starts to appear, which is after 40 to 45 minutes of sitting. The rest of the 10 to 15 minutes I spend observing the body, mainly the pains and aches, until the 1 hour bell rings. This is the report in general how my sitting practice is progressing. From Venerable Dhamma talk, I gather that after Kayanupassana stage, I might be reaching to Vedanupassana stage during the same session. Is this a correct understanding? Previously, I was thinking that this cannot happen in the same session. We are in debt for your valuable service with metta. It's the end of the question.
Yeah, as you mentioned that at the beginning, we can't say that immediately we are coming to the Vedanupassana. Rather, as we continue our practice, we are developing mindfulness. We are developing a fair amount of, say, clear comprehension. So as a result, even the various, the element characteristics, the Kayanupassana level, can convert into the Vedanupassana. So it becomes somewhat simplified. Now, it is not many different types of element characteristics are present, but you feel that more some of them are generating some pleasurable feelings. Sometimes they generate some painful feeling. Most of the time they generate some neutral feeling. So you now only have 3 types. Previously, suppose you had 12 element characteristics, but now they have simplified only to 3 types of feelings. So it can happen. So it can happen during a same session as you continue. As I mentioned, it may not be your early stages of the practice, but say after a couple of months, say you definitely will be able to recognize various feelings. And during the same session, you may switch from say Kayanupassana to the Vedanupassana. So it can happen. So what you are experiencing is quite correct. So we don't need to stop that. We don't need to stop the flowing of the progress. So rather let it happen. So you may be able to traverse from Kayanupassana to the Vedanupassana. Even later, you can get on to the Chittanupassana as well.
Question number 7 of 10. This is on mindful sitting. Vandami Bante. In today's sitting practice, I noticed something different than before. Normally when I do the sitting, I notice that initially the focus is mainly on the body and then it goes to observing the whole, such as noises, body sensations, breathing, thoughts, etc. Sometimes I feel that the thoughts are more powerful and get carried away with it, and the rest falls into the background. Sometimes the focus is very strong on the entirety and thoughts are only a portion, like kind of 80-20 rule. However, when the thoughts are 80%, normally I will stop the practice because it is so hard to get back into focusing on the whole. The thoughts are too powerful. So in this instance, I will reset and restart the practice. Or as Lokuswamin Nuhanse says, saluwa gasa dala negitina. But today, what I did was I kept at it, even though the focus was mainly on the thoughts and the rest was in the background. I kept going, and then slowly, the focus shifted to the whole, away from the thoughts. I did not force not to think on the thoughts, but just kept my focus, like to see what might happen. Only today I realized that I have normally prematurely stopped the process that was going to happen anyway. Please explain a bit more on this phenomena. Much merits and thank you.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, we have to have some confidence to face this thinking process. So if we stop in between and get up, thinking that thoughts are now going to overpower us, so that then we are not getting the risk. So rather, when we are able to have some mindfulness, one day we have to take a risk and see whether how mind is now going to react. So for that, we have to allow the mind to play as it like. So while you are keeping the mind so hard manner or so rigid manner, so it can't move. On that situation, we can't say the mind has really tamed, because we are strongly holding it. We have restricted it. But as we develop mindfulness, we have to give some freedom to the mind to move as it likes, because we have some confidence. You have heard about sati bala, the power of mindfulness. So at the early stages, it is not the power of mindfulness. It is simply the mindfulness. Kayanupassana mindfulness, vedanupassana, chittanupassana, dhammanupassana, those are the levels of mindfulness. And then it is coming to the faculty level. So you recognize as a quality of mindfulness. There's a kind of a quality called mindfulness. Now I have that quality. Or there may be certain other instances I am not mindful. So you recognize this, say, mental capacity, something called mindfulness. But when you reach the sati bala, the power of mindfulness, so there you have some confidence now. So you know how to handle it. You know how to tackle it. And even if mind become unmindful, you don't have much of a rush to come back, because you know you can win the situation. You have now confidence. Pamade na kampatiti sati bala. So Buddha mentioned, so even when the mind become unmindful, if you are not wavering, if you are not getting shocked, if you are not getting sort of panicked, so that is called sati bala. That is called the power of mindfulness, because you know the technique. You have some confidence. You know how to sort of sort out the situation. And you have your own hands-on experience. So therefore, you allow the mind to little play and see how it is happening. So there's a beautiful simile Venerable Analeo is giving. So he says that like the parents taking their children to a playground. So the parents are simply watching the children are playing. So they are, say, playing, they are jumping, they are hitting each other, or they are playing football, cricket, whatever it is. So parents simply watch them. So they have to allow children to play. So similarly, so we also, once we develop mindfulness, so once we have confidence, we have to allow the mind to little play while we do mindful observation. So this way, slowly we start to avoid participation. Now mind because of this, its own momentum, it's playing, but we are not triggering it or we are not participating too much on it. And we slowly avoid getting deluded by these thoughts. We understand they are merely thoughts. We understand they are merely fabrications. We understand they are merely, say, mirage. So likewise, slowly we are applying Buddha's teaching, we are applying our own experience, and we become mindful. So as a result, so the illusionary nature of the mind become less and less. The thoughts loses their power, they loses their grip. So this is how we need to slowly calm down ourselves. So that is actually very natural calming down. It is not that we suppress thinking. It is not that we stop in between. Rather, we allow the show to end. We have our patience. We patiently observe without participating. Sometimes it's called non-judgmental observation. Without participating, without getting deluded, as much as possible, we are simply observing. And likewise, what happens is, then after some time, it loses its strength, it loses its tempting nature, and slowly it will fade away. So this is how we allow the mind to naturally calm down. So without suppressing, without introducing too much concentration. So we have kind of an awareness, clarity of mind to some extent. And with that, we can continue. So this is very tension-free. So this way, of course, it may take some time, but this technique is tension-free. These techniques allow the mind to naturally calm down. And we are actually developing enough confidence in ourselves. And we understand the various tricks of the mind because we are observing it. We are analyzing it. We can recognize various thought patterns or our inner tendencies. So this is how we are, in a way, experiment our mind.
So we have four more questions and we'll go over time. Is that okay?
Okay, we'll try to give quick answers.
Okay. The three are very short questions, but I don't know, the answers might be long though, right. Because they're all general questions, not practice related, not necessarily practice. So this is question number 8 of 11. Dear Bhante, would you please teach us Ananta Lakkhana Sutra on this program? Much merits with Metta.
So we'll take that as the next session then.
Okay.
Because today we completed Pena Pindupama Sutta.
Yeah.
So now you are giving a proposal for the next week.
Alright. So the next one is a question from the Dhamma Sermon. Okay, I think it's a general question as well. So, dear Bhante, if someone has the belief I exist, then how does one remove that belief? Thank you for the great service you provide with Metta.
Yeah, actually, we all start with that kind of a belief. We either think that this body belongs to me and this body is mine and this body is I am. All the thoughts belongs to me and thoughts represent me. Thoughts represent I am. So likewise, we have all these personality views. So that is why, so we are going on and on. So the practice helps us to penetrate this. So it is not that we immediately can overcome this wrong understanding, but the practice is capable of removing this wrong understanding. So that is the technique in a way. That is the Buddha's teaching. That is the path. So as we develop the path has the capacity to remove this ignorance, to remove this avijja, to remove this wrong understanding. So till we have the avijja, so we do various fabrications, we add lot of eye making, mind making. So as we develop wisdom, as we develop vipassana, so we get enough wisdom. So as we become wise, no ignorance, then less fabrications, then less eye-making and mind-making. So it's a matter of the practice. So it is the practice which is capable of removing this eye-notion or eye-making, the personality view. Yeah.
question number 10 of 11. This is also a general question. Dear Bhante, is it possible to follow the path of realization while having children and a family? The question.
So you have to answer me. So Chamila, can you answer me?
That's going to be tricky. I don't want to answer the person who asked the question.
No, because I don't have family now. I don't have children. So you all have families and you all have children, but you all are continuing the practice. So therefore, actually, Buddha mentioned, so his teaching is not limited to the monks and nuns, and his teaching is common to lay people. And during the Buddha's time, there are many, many stream winners, many, say, non-returners in the lay life. And Buddha considered and Buddha mentioned, and in this dispensation, take, say, for example, Chitta Guhapati as the example for lay people, for my lay followers. And Chitta Guhapati is an anagami, is a non-returner. So that is the example that Buddha asked lay people to take as an example. So you can see where Buddha is directing us. So he didn't even ask, okay, take King Bimbisara or say another wealthy king or say Anathapindika or even to take them as an example. But Buddha takes Chitta Guhapati. He is the motto, Buddha says, for the men followers, the male followers of the Buddha's teaching. And then for females, Buddha talks about Kujjattara, then Velukantaki Nandamata. So they as the example. Velukantaki Nandamata is actually an anagami, non-returner. So they are the examples Buddha giving for the female followers. So those are non-returners. So therefore, you can't say that you can't practice, but I understand it is difficult because there are a lot of responsibilities and you have to deal with so many other people, etc. And it is difficult. So on the other hand, monk's life have some freedom. And if you do it properly, there are enough opportunities. But even among the monks, sad to say that very few are practicing. So that is the situation. So among lay people, there are many, say, potential people available, and they are actually trying their best to find out opportunities and to incorporate practice to their day-to-day living and to day-to-day activities. And rather than thinking that you always have to go to a retreat or always have to have a sitting and walking to practice, how to incorporate mindfulness to the day-to-day activities. So likewise, we should find out various ways and means to incorporate practice to our typical way of life.
So this is question number 11. This is the last question. It's a general question. So it has two parts. I think I'll read them both. Most Venerable Bhante, part A is, although the Thai, Burmese, etc. overall follow Buddha's teachings, some regions in the world practice revolting actions as Buddhism.
Sorry, can you repeat that part?
So this is actually regarding the question that was answered earlier about Buddhist traditions. So the first one is, although the Thai, Burmese, etc. follow the Buddha's teachings, some regions in the world practice revolting actions as Buddhism. Mm-hmm. It's talking about serving meat. And part B is, even in Sri Lanka, there's different practices in the Theravada and Mahayana sections. Please explain why there are divisions for us to practice Buddha's teaching. Much merit. Yeah.
So what to do? That is a different way of understanding, so different arguments. A lot of things are there. A lot of differences are there. But if we are able to go to the roots, if we are able to go to the authentic teachings, the early Buddhism, so there I think mostly we can understand the some core teaching. That is where sometimes certain monks trying to emphasize the core teachings, say the Sutta Pitaka, the core teachings. So most of all are very much accepting, not only the Theravadins, even the Mahayana people, not only the Sri Lankans, even Thai, Burmese, all believe, all accept the Sutta Pitaka as the original teachings. And so likewise, so if we go to the authentic teachings of the Buddha, early Buddhism, then actually we can establish on a common ground. So later there are so many differences introduced to the, say, order. So they have various arguments or various discrepancies, differences. So as a result, different sects are there. Now everything is in a very much like divided. It's very difficult to come to the same like in the Buddha's time. Even during the Buddha's time, there are say clashes and all these things even happened. So this is the human nature. So we can't stop this by simply giving a proposal or something like that, because now more and more people are becoming too much high-headed, conceited, and they have their own beliefs, and they want to say that their understanding is the best understanding, all others' understandings, or those are all wrong understanding, those are michadittis. So likewise, people are becoming so much restricted or narrow-minded. But real Buddha's teaching help us to become, have a kind of a open-minded, to have flexible approach. So that is where the Sammaditti is quite helpful. So without holding on to strong views, so how to have a open mind, how not to hold anything, how not to grasp anything. So this is how Buddha is taking us in a very beautiful path, non-coercive path. So therefore, there are many differences, not only in the Buddhism, there are many differences even in the various other religions. So that is how happens to any religion as it is moving forward. So we can't stop that nature. Oh, this is in a way how things are declining in a way. Yeah.
So that's all the questions we have for today. Yeah. So we'll just conclude the program. Thank you to everyone who participated for the program. And as we talked about, this is the 50th session in this program of Mindfulness for Young Adults. So we would first like to thank Bhante for his valuable time, especially when there are multiple programs at the monastery, and also to everyone who contributes and supports this program. So much merits to everyone. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Therwan Sannai. Thank you very much for participation. So we'll see you next week. Therwan Sannai.